Radio Tonic. An audio essay.
Inventing Peace, Part 2, by Mary Zernazzi and Wim Wenders.
An examination of the relationship between technologies, images, and peace.
Inventing Peace.
Noch niemandem ist es gelungen, ein Epos des Friedens anzustimmen. Was ist denn ein Frieden, dass er nicht auf die Dauer begeistert und dass sich von ihm kaum erzählen lässt?
Nobody has succeeded yet in singing an epic of peace. What is it about peace that it does not create permanent enthusiasm and that makes it so hard to put it in a tale?
Go, 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 said the bird. Humankind cannot bear very much reality. Time past and time future, what might have been and what has been, point to one end, which is always present. T.S. Eliot.
Inventing Peace. Which future are seeing?
In our book, Inventing Peace, Wim Wenders and I explored the question of what is peace and how do we invent it. From our encounters and investigations, it seems that much of the hindrance to peace revolves around the question of how we look at the world but do not see it, when there's so much violence, injustice and suffering. So what are the ethical and moral consequences of looking but not seeing? We consider this one of the fundamental questions of our time.
One dreams in front of his fire, and the imagination discovers that the fire is the motive force for the world. One dreams in front of a spring, and the imagination discovers that water is the blood of the earth, that the earth has living depths. Gaston Bachelard.
Speed. Speed and technology have created new geographies and transnational spaces. There's so many images circulating the globe with ever-increasing speed that we look all the time, but we don't have the means or the skills anymore to see. This raises the question, how will we remember and what cultures will evolve in a technological world? German philosopher Martin Heidegger once noted that the question concerning technology involves the illumination and piety of thought, as well as its danger. Therefore, the stakes are twofold. Technology as part of human life can enable the cultivation of the future in the revealing of truth, or technology can lead to destructiveness. Heidegger often cites the German poet Friedrich Hölderlin's line, "Poetically man dwells." Hölderlin searched for the sacredness of God and men. Heidegger looked at the mystery that could unfold in the skillful use of technology. Both poet and philosopher believed that the holy could appear in new and unforeseen ways. So how do we think of the artful orientation of technology and the mystery that it unfolds?
Yeah, how can technologies help us to be more involved? For instance, because in many ways technology numbs us and technology overwhelms us, and in that state, being numb or overwhelmed, peace cannot even begin to be perceived. So is there technology, and is there ways to use technology that avoid this numbing and avoid the avalanche of information and put us into a position to be with us and with somebody else and to be ourselves and to have an identity that is able to grasp something big as peace. So, and we came up with some results thinking about that question. How can filmmakers or painters, teachers, for instance, to see or look differently?
Yeah, that whole thing about painting, I think, is really important. That whole thing that being able to look at something and look at it again and again and again and to see different elements and different parts of things and different things that are beautiful about just that look. And I think that's something about the difference between sort of being able to see and look.
The painter is not in front of you. He sees something and puts that in front of you. Or Bresson or the filmmakers we looked at, they put something in front of you. They're not there, but they make you see.
It seems that in Latin, photograph would be said imago lucis opera expressa, which is to say image revealed, extracted, mounted, expressed, like the juice of a lemon, by the action of light. And if photography belonged to a world with some residual sensitivity to myth, we should exult over the richness of the symbol. The loved body is immortalized by the mediation of a precious metal, silver, monument and luxury, to which we might add the notion that this metal, like all metals of alchemy, is alive.
What we find today is that people no longer have the patience for detail or stillness to really look. Maybe we need to reconsider then how we look at the world and how we let the world speak to us.
Places are in peace. I've photographed remote locations on this planet, from the deepest Australian desert to the American West, from the heart of Africa to Armenia. But I'm not only attracted to faraway places. I've taken pictures in my own city of Berlin in New York or on skyscrapers in Sao Paulo. What I did in all these places was to look for their company. I tried to just be there, lose myself in those spaces and listen to them as much as possible. Yes, just listen. One can do that. We have that ability. We call it a sense of place. In ancient times, that was a much more developed human perception than today. It was one of our senses, like seeing, touching, tasting, smelling. People depended on their sense of place for survival. Too often today, our navigation systems have replaced that capacity. Nowadays, it's actually a human propensity in danger of disappearance, a sense in the process of going to waste. It's being replaced by Google Earth and TomToms. Just sit by a river and let it flow by for a while. The river starts talking to you. Its presence gets strong and convincing. Its time superimposes itself on your own sense of time. It tells you to calm down and become part of its flow. Listen, the river says. Before you know it, the waves splashing onto the stones or the sand in front of you will have stories to tell. After all, that river saw history. We always think that we are the only ones witnessing the past. Or just walk into a forest. Come to a clearing and sit down among the trees. No, it does not have to be redwood trees. It can be a local birch, pine, or palm. These trees will make you go quiet. You don't even have to hug them. Just lean your back against one of them and wait. Listen to their language, the wind, the birds, the rustle, the cracking of branches. Or just sit on an empty beach and watch the waves. Or walk over those pebbles and stones for a while. Get into the rhythm of the surf. Look at the shells and clams being washed ashore and being pulled back out into the water. This is a mighty language, a cacophony of voices. Or spend a night in the desert, sleeping under the sky. Sit in a cathedral or under a bridge. Walk through a valley or climb a mountain. You'll no longer have any trouble accepting that places talk to you. It's just that we are too used to being the talkers ourselves. That has become a habit. We've lost the ability to listen to places.
Peace is about what is actual. Is actual only for one time and only for one place. For it's in moments of time that ethical choices and moral implications of events transpire. The present is what matters. Martin Buber said, "Reality then is inseparable, incomparable, irreducible, now, happening once only. It gazes upon me with an awesome look." This awesome look is the threshold of peace.
Places do want to talk normally, and they open up if you're patient. I love to listen to them. A camera then can become a recording device, eventually not right away, to capture the place's story or history and gather details of its account. The entire earth is talking to us, not only nature, Mother Nature. Water, plants, trees and rocks, plains, hills, valleys and oceans, but also what we've constructed on it. Roads, buildings, bridges, signs. Anyway, whenever I listened, better, when I allowed myself to listen, when I was privileged to listen, when I was invited to listen, I never found any other message, never heard any other sound, never eavesdropped on any other story than peaceful ones. Places are in peace. They know nothing else. We know it, the something else. The absence of peace. The war, the violence, the, what shall we call it, that is the reversal of peace. We don't even have a proper word for it. Unpeace? We seem to bring it with us, this other element. Introduce invasion and destruction everywhere and turn landscapes into battlefields and minefields. But I don't want to talk about us. I want to talk about places and their relentless and unbroken ability, capacity, talent, gift, will to convey and talk of peace.
So it's about that, I suppose, in a way, it's about a kind of ethics too, about listening to place and to events, even, you know, after there have been terrible events.
Yeah, like my encounter with Ground Zero, one of the worst and most hurt places on this planet. I was there a couple of weeks afterwards, and I was allowed to spend some time on it. It was already blocked off for photographers, but I was allowed to spend half a day there, and also to take pictures, but to look. And it was very privileged because, as I said, by then we had all seen all these images more than we had wanted to. And for me, it was so important that I could see with my own eyes and be exposed to it. So I managed to have access for half a day. And I managed to be able to listen to the place. And stood there and listened and found and heard what the place was telling me. And I made a handful of photographs about that too, because I just couldn't quite believe what happened. That happened in front of my eyes, and it was that everything was still smoldering and stinky, and there's still dust, and all of a sudden the sun came up and shone and started to shine into this hellhole. And then the sun was reflected by the buildings around. It was like the sun was came from all sides, and all of a sudden even the workers stopped and everybody looked, and all of a sudden there was sort of beauty there. And it was like the place said, look, I'm hurt. I'm not well, but I don't want more blood to be shed. I want you to realize that time will heal and I will heal. And it was like the place was asking for peace as a result to the injury that happened there.
If we really look, every moment has potential to transform the violence that assaults us. Herein lies the power of invention and choice. Images of violence do not belong to another world or to the past or to remote places and events. They exist. A photograph becomes a certificate of presence. It is not empathy that is required here, nor even sympathy, but the connection with suffering, to be a sincere witness for others. This witnessing does not put others at a distance, nor does it seek testimony, redemption, or solution. Rather, it begs questions such as, what needs to be done here? What is our responsibility? Or simply, how can I help?
I know from my own life and from my work that anything that you do not do with care is just lost. And if you don't do it with care and love, it cannot possibly be perceived by anybody else carefully and lovingly if it's not invested in the first place.
How does peace fit in there, do you think?
Well, in that new space which can exist between audience and the world shown in a film, in a documentary, the way we're exposed to the presence of people in these 3D documentaries of the future. I think in this space that appears as a possibility in front of us, I think peace enters in there in a big way. And peace needs a chance in movies because they have been really largely dedicated to war and violence. And the epics of peace are very, very, very rare in the history of cinema. And I think this new language, this three-dimensional language that creates so much more involvement, I think can also create different kind of perception. It can create the immediacy that exists between the I and the thou, between me and you. And in that immediacy, I think peace, the perception of peace, has a new chance.
One dreams in front of his fire, and the imagination discovers that the fire is the motive force for the world. One dreams in front of a spring, and the imagination discovers that water is the blood of the earth, that the earth has living depths.
Inventing peace involves grace and beauty. It's an artful orientation of technology and a genuine dialogue with the world.
There is a time for everything.
Times for peace are in the middle of the night, in the darkest hour, at the break of dawn,
early in the morning,
at sunrise,
all morning long,
later in the morning,
later in the morning,
during the day,
in broad daylight,
at high noon,
in the middle of the day,
early in the afternoon,
early in the afternoon,
in the sunny afternoon,
in the sunny afternoon,
later in the afternoon,
later in the afternoon,
at dusk,
at dusk,
at sunset,
at sunset,
when night falls, in the evening,
in the evening,
late in the evening,
late in the evening,
at night,
at night,
at midnight,
at midnight,
late at night,
and so on and so on.
Adapted from the book Inventing Peace, A Dialogue on Perception. Inventing Peace Part 2 was written by Mary Zanazi and Vim Wenders and produced by Mary Zanazi with sound engineer Stephen Tilley. The supervising producer was Julie Shapiro. Listen to last week's Part 1 and make sure you tune in next week for the conclusion to this radio series. This is the Radiotonic Podcast, storytelling with a twist.
Find us on Twitter @RNRadiotonic.